for an American president who really does enjoy pomp and spectacle to say that a country which is one of the largest populations in this world is actually going to welcome him with open arms.
President Trump travels to India. It's Monday, February 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, coronavirus spreads beyond China. Afghan refugees wary of Taliban peace deal. Driving Jeeps in Pakistan. Bloomberg for president. And tech-enhanced bodies. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump is on his way to India to meet his counterpart, Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Both sides are already managing expectations by saying they will not be signing a big trade deal. Still, the visit will be full of pomp and circumstance, with Trump already touting the massive crowds expected to turn up for him. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara takes a look at what we can expect in this meeting between leaders of the world's two most populous democracies.
India is sweeping its streets, scrubbing its landmarks, even building a wall to hide its slums in preparation for a visit from Donald Trump. The U.S. president is scheduled to arrive February 24th on a maiden two-day trip that aims to strengthen bilateral relations that have been strained by trade differences.
But I'm really saving the big deal for later on. We're doing a very big trade deal with India. We'll have it. I don't know if it'll be done before the election, but we'll have a very big deal with India.
Trump will likely announce several billion dollars in sales of American military hardware, but talks on a larger trade deal are complicated by issues including data privacy and e-commerce controls.
We would not like to rush into a deal, as the issues involved are complicated, and there are many decisions which actually could affect or impact the lives of millions of people.
Still, the visit is an opportunity for Trump and Prime Minister Narendra Modi, two populist leaders, to score domestic and international points.
For an Indian Prime Minister to have an American president come and visit, and for an American president who really does enjoy pomp and spectacle to say that a country which is one of the largest populations in this world is actually going to welcome him with open arms.
Last September, Trump showed up for Howdy Modi, an Indian diaspora event in Houston, Texas. The Prime Minister is returning the favor with a gathering at the world's biggest cricket stadium in his home state of Ahmedabad called Namaste Trump.
He told me we'll have 7 million people between the airport and the event.
Last year, Trump offered to mediate between India and neighboring Pakistan on the Kashmir territorial dispute, which Islamabad welcomed but Delhi rejected. Indian officials are wary the issue may come up again. Another potential complication, the U.S. effort to reach a peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Taliban being allowed to come back into power is something India is not happy and not comfortable with. And in this, India's concern is that Pakistan may get a back entry into Afghanistan, and the U.S. deal may help Pakistan come back in.
This will be the fourth consecutive American president visit to India, continuing the shift in Washington's allegiance to Delhi over Islamabad. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News at the White House.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. South Korea raises alert level for coronavirus to highest level. Vietnam and United States cooperate on arrest in child sex case. China-sponsored exhibit about Tibet is closed in New York. Chinese trapped at home by coronavirus feel the strain. Thailand's neighbors denounce court's opposition party ban. You'll find all this and much more when you make a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. Also stop by our Twitter site and also voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. South Korea has raised its alert level for the coronavirus disease to the highest level, and President Moon Jae-in urged officials not to hesitate to take unprecedented powerful measures to contain the outbreak. Korea's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said of the 123 new cases reported Sunday, 113 were in the fourth largest city, Daegu, and surrounding areas. South Korea now has 556 reported coronavirus cases. Apart from the Diamond Princess cruise ship docked in Japan, South Korea has the most infections outside of China. China reported 648 new infections Sunday for a total of 76,936. It said 97 more people had died, raising the death toll in the country to 2,442. Outside China, more than 1,200 people have been infected with the virus and more than a dozen have died. Among the 11 million people under lockdown in the Chinese city of Wuhan, the epicenter of the new coronavirus, is Kristen Xiao, a Springfield, Virginia student. She's been stuck in China since visiting with her family in Wuhan during the Lunar New Year holidays. Now, her school is stepping in for help. For VOA, Yunjing Cho tells us more.
The answer is wrong.
Students are hard at work solving logarithmic equations at this high school in Springfield, Virginia. At first glance, it's like any other classroom across America. But look carefully, and you'll see a tripod with an iPad mounted on top, following the teacher's movement. This technology is what allows Kristen Xiao to join her class remotely from Wuhan, China, ground zero of the coronavirus outbreak.
First time. I heard about acceleration.
This graph. You said this one, first time.
Kristen Xiao was visiting her family in Wuhan in China's Hubei province for the Lunar New Year holidays. With the entire city under lockdown to contain the spread of the new coronavirus, Kristen's plan to return to her school in Virginia is now on hold indefinitely. So Kristen connects to her classes live online from 9 p.m. to midnight in Wuhan.
This incident in Wuhan is giving me a lot of study pressure. So I was already in 11th grade. So my time is very tense.
That's where the technology can help, says the school's superintendent.
As a school, we were looking for an opportunity to be able to facilitate learning while she is in China, so that way she's just not sitting at home doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And we wanted her to be part of our school, so we kind of brainstormed and developed a system using a piece of hardware that's called Swivel. It allows the student to be live in the classroom.
Kristen recently sent a video message to her school asking to send much-needed medical aid to hospitals in Wuhan. Her fellow students and faculty moved quickly and raised $30,000 in just a week.
I want to put out my heart to them because I don't know what they're going through. I don't know their fears. And from what I can see in China right now, it's very scary. People aren't allowed to leave their homes, and it's something that we don't experience in America.
It really does hit home that this isn't just something affecting one part of the world. This coronavirus is affecting everyone, mm-hmm. and we need to help as much as possible.
The school is working with an international aid agency, Hungarian Baptist Aid, to send assistance to Wuhan. Officials say they'll be sending special respiratory masks and contactless thermometers to Wuhan Central Hospital and the Hubei Children's Medical Center in the next 10 days. The students and the parents are hoping the aid they send will help shore up the much-needed medical aid in Wuhan, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. Eunjung Cho, VOA News, Washington.
Now in Asia, health officials in Afghanistan reported 3 suspected cases of coronavirus Sunday in a western province next to the border with Iran, where the outbreak of the disease has killed at least 8 people amid a rise in new cases. The Afghan government temporarily suspended air and land travel with Iran. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad you're joining us on VOA Asia. As Afghanistan grapples with the possibility of a peace deal, the future of millions of Afghan refugees also looks a little more hopeful. United Nations and other officials at a refugee conference in Pakistan warn that peace alone will not be enough to send them home. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad.
Trucks, cars, wagons full of household goods, pots, pans, beds, and the clothes they could carry. War forced millions to flee Afghanistan over the last four decades. 95% moved to neighboring Iran and Pakistan. None intended to stay long. Now, a third generation of Afghans is living outside their homeland, host countries are struggling for resources, and international donor aid is scarce.
Emergencies coming up elsewhere, even in this own region, we have the Rohingya situation, for example. So donor communities, the donor governments tend to look at the most compelling emergencies, and the protracted refugee situations tend to lose out.
Many Rohingya fled violence in Myanmar. The United States and Taliban are close to signing a peace deal in Doha. Soon after, the Taliban will begin formal negotiations with a group representing other Afghan factions. If all goes well, it could mean an end to the long-running conflict and an opportunity for the refugees to go back home.
I am cautiously optimistic that we've made progress. It's a very complicated problem, no doubt.
Twice before, Afghan refugees returned home in large numbers. Once after the fall of the Soviet Union and again after the fall of the Taliban. Both times, conditions on the ground forced them to leave their homeland again. A successful refugee repatriation will require a lot more than an end to the war, says the head of the UN Refugee Agency.
Immediately after peace, if peace comes, there needs to be massive investment in economic opportunities, in infrastructure, in other areas of development.
Without such investment, the fate of the refugees and of Afghanistan itself remain uncertain. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Coming up, we turn the key and hit the gas. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. The United Nations reports the conflict in Afghanistan killed more than 3,400 civilians and injured nearly 7,000 others in 2019. The UN assistance mission in Afghanistan blamed the Taliban, Islamic State, and other militant groups for causing 49% of the deaths. Pro-government forces in crossfire accounted for the rest. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, each year in Pakistan, drivers throw down a challenge to meet in the desert for sun-scorched immortality. They ride custom-built 4x4s in an off-road race that draws hundreds of thousands of spectators. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports a living legend once again stepped onto the gas and tore through the sand.
Recently, in Pakistan's Cholistan Desert, more than 130 cars churned up clouds of sand in an annual race before the dust-filled eyes of 500,000 spectators. Drivers raced against a living legend.
Cholistan is a 24,000 square kilometer desert in which there is hardly a place where people do not know Ronnie Patel. This is a matter of great honor and pride for me, and it gives me great pleasure.
Ronnie Patel won the first Desert Jeep Rally in 1994. Decades later, despite placing in the top three at each rally, he says winning trophies doesn't get his motor running.
All the respect, all the love, all the recognition I've earned is because of this sport. It's what keeps me going.
But custom cars are expensive, which for a time left lower budget racers in the garage. Not anymore, says Patel.
we introduced a stock category that isn't for the rich. It's for people who want to race their regular cars, and participation doesn't cost much.
About 500,000 people came to this rally. But for Patel, the race can grow and deserves a bigger track.
Jeep rallies have a bright future in Pakistan. With proper management, it could become huge. It's already gone international.
Fans of the race love the setting as much as the action.
We came with our friends to watch this Jeep rally, and we're having a great time. It's exciting, but it looks difficult. It's amazing how they drive these cars, just flying to the skies and literally covering people's faces.
Despite its name, the days-long rally is open to more than just Jeeps. The race was suspended for 10 years starting in 1995 because of security concerns in Pakistan. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia. Thailand's neighbors in Southeast Asia are condemning Bangkok for dissolving an opposition party Friday, which critics view as the latest sign democracy is in retreat in the region. The Constitutional Court in Thailand ordered the Future Forward Party to disband for violating campaign finance laws. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg was a major target of his Democratic rivals in his first debate last week in Las Vegas, Nevada. Bloomberg has already had a major impact on the race by spending hundreds of millions of dollars on TV ads and has shot into second place in some national public opinion polls behind Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who was the winner of the Nevada caucuses on Saturday. Bloomberg now finds himself in a crowd of moderates all trying to be the main alternative to Sanders, a self-described Democratic socialist who has strong support from the progressive wing of the party. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
In the latest Democratic debate broadcast by NBC News, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg walked into the political equivalent of the lion's den.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against, a billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
Leading the charge was Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another.
Also eager to pile on Bloomberg was the front runner, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
We are giving a voice to people who are saying we are sick and tired of billionaires like Mr. Bloomberg seeing huge expansions of their wealth while 500,000 people sleep out on the street tonight.
Bloomberg tried to make the case that he could unite Democrats and take on President Trump in November.
I think we have two questions to face tonight. One is, who can beat Donald Trump? And number two, who can do the job if they get into the White House? And I would argue that I am the candidate that can do exactly both of those things.
On the economy, a unique leader, Mike Bloomberg's created over 400,000 jobs.
Bloomberg has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to promote himself as a centrist alternative to Sanders. But his wealth and late entry into the race have also made him a Sanders target.
We are a democracy, not an oligarchy. You're not going to buy this election.
Let me finish. Thank you.
Bloomberg's strategy is to exploit the uncertainty in the Democratic race, says analyst Jim Kessler.
His candidacy was really contingent on there being a muddled race. There's a muddled race. So if you look at the chessboard right now, which he has no control over, the pieces on the chessboard have moved in probably the most advantageous way it is for him.
Thank you.
Bloomberg presents himself as a moderate alternative in the Democratic race, but he has plenty of company, says Julie Pace.
A Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, who are really looking to break out of that moderate lane, he's actually making that lane much more crowded by getting in the race at this stage.
Having skipped the early contest, Bloomberg is counting on a strong performance in the 14 primaries being held on Super Tuesday, March 3rd, says analyst John Fortier.
He hasn't really faced the scrutiny of the other candidates. I think he might have a place to put his flag on, but we don't know. And so I think the possibility is there because of his money, because of the spending he's done, and yet we don't know that he will stand up to scrutiny of the other candidates.
Bloomberg will continue to bombard the airwaves with ads, but his rivals are sure to raise questions about his viability after a rocky performance in his first debate. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
It seems inevitable that in this era of smart technology, people would begin to think of ways to make their tech part of their body. Today, people have the ability to change themselves in new and unprecedented ways, and a 19-year-old Kailandri is living proof. Anna Nelson has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Action.
My name is Kailandri, and I am a cyborg.
Cyborgs is short for cybernetic organisms. It's a fancy name for a thing that's part machine, part human. Today, the 19-year-old Kailandri is being followed by a camera crew. A movie about the teenage cyborg from Barcelona is in the making. Landry has a special chip that will be implanted on his skull and another one in his arm that allow him to sense the cosmic rays that surround us and convert them into musical notes. The Princeton University invited the young man to come to New York City to give a speech and explain what it means to be a cyborg.
I was so excited for being there. I was so excited being able to present the cosmic sense for the first time. So I went to Princeton to present this prototype and also to talk about cyborg art.
Landry was born in 2000, and for him, high-tech has always meant much more than laptops and smartphones. He got interested in space exploration and quantum physics, and later fell in love with music.
So I started creating musical atmospheres and actually released an album that is space and everything like that.
A meeting with Neil Harbison, a Spanish-born British-Irish cyborg artist and activist, became the next important step in Landry's life. Since birth, Harbison couldn't distinguish colors. But after he became the world's first cyborg and had an antenna implanted in his skull, he learned to see color, thanks to a special chip that reads the color of objects to the brain. Together with a few like-minded people, Harbison founded the Cyborg Foundation.
They asked me if I wanted to create a cyborg sense, and I said yes, and they took me to the Cyborg Labs, the Cyborg Foundation, and I could see everything they had created, and we did an activity that Neil proposed, that it was creating a timeline of all my life, divided by the different years I had lived. And so I would put one memory to each year, and then I would see if there was any pattern repeating.
At the moment, Kai is wearing a prototype of the chip that will be implanted in his skull, which will make him the first person to directly receive signals from space converted into sounds.
It's like hearing a light particle touching. My sense is like... So it works this way. This is the receptor, and this is the receptor of cosmic rays. So in this chip, we find different parts. This part is a silicon photomultiplier, which is basically a chip that receives light particles. And what we do is we receive the light particle, the subatomic light particles that are created when cosmic rays fall into our planet. And it receives these subatomic particles, one particle for each ray, and it translates with this Arduino, which is right here. It translates each cosmic ray by energetic density into a different pitched note. It's mostly beautiful. I love being able to hear space.
Landry says he is ready for this experience. He believes it is part of human evolution, part of exploring nature instead of conquering and destroying it. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Great places to download our program. If for some reason you didn't hear it all, you can find it right there, as well as our website at voanews.com. We're also on social media, if you haven't already noticed. See us on YouTube, follow us on VOA Asia Twitter, and let us hear from you. You can always write to us, voaasia@voanews.com. You can hear us on the radio, Chiang Mai University. Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand has our program. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Tony Pollack, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.